So I got the pulpit on my last day. And there's a tradition in many universities of a last lecture. The idea is if you had one last chance to address the student audience, what would you tell them? Even though I will preach a brief Christmas Eve sermonette, usually advertised as the shortest sermon you will ever hear, I will do that tonight. So this morning is really my last lecture, my last sermon at First Baptist Decatur. And so I had a chance to think, if I had one last chance to talk to this congregation, what would I tell them? What would I tell you? Well, I would choose Colossians 1, 15 through 20, in order to tell you that Jesus Christ holds all supremacy in creation and in the church. In a world full of contenders for power, Jesus Christ is supreme. I would tell you that Jesus Christ is the only one worthy of worship in a world full of false gods. I would tell you that Jesus Christ is our only sure hope in life and in death, in a world full of despair as well as a world full of false and illusory hopes. I would tell you this, resolve to know only Jesus Christ, the incarnate God, the kingdom Messiah, crucified Savior, and risen Lord. Resolve this, and at the deepest level, no matter what else happens to you, all will be well for you. And all will be well for the church called First Baptist Church of Decatur. Colossians 1, 15 through 20 rivals the prologue to the Gospel of John in the exalted nature of its theology of Christ. In keeping with what I have often done in this pulpit, today I will walk us through this text phrase by phrase, pointing to the implications I see in it along the way. A very simple structure. We will follow the text. If you have a Bible, you might want to follow along. 1:15. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of or over all creation. The image of the invisible God. Most of us are familiar with the crucial biblical teaching that human beings are made in the image of God. It's in Genesis 1. Remember these famous lines? So God made humanity in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Now, there's been long-running debate about what the author of Genesis intended to say by talking about us being made in the image of God. I think that it means at least this, that human beings were and are made to resemble God in some crucial ways. We were given intelligence, creativity, and love, and invited to maximize these gifts. I think Genesis 1 also means that human beings occupy the pinnacle of creation, the highest place in the created order, but what comes with that is commensurate responsibility to care for the creation. I think Genesis 1 intends to say that both women and men are equally made in the image of God. Male and female, he created them. And so there can be no some hierarchy of the genders. And also that all human beings are made in the image of God. Equally worthy, infinitely worthy of respect. And so this human tendency to rank people according to our standards is smashed from the beginning. All human beings made in the image of God, every tribe, race, tongue, nation, status, class, whatever, all made in the image of God. So this is how we were made, but human beings turned against God and messed everything up. Psalm 14 says it plainly. The Lord looks down from heaven on humankind to see if there are any who are wise, who seek after God. They have all gone astray. They are all alike perverse. There is no one who does good, not one. Colossians 1 is just one of several places in the New Testament where a wonderful new idea is introduced as an answer to our sin problem. And the specific concept is that Jesus Christ was, is, and always will be the truest image of God. Jesus is the image of God, showing us what the image of God is supposed to mean for us. He is, in the Greek, icon to theo, the icon of God. The icon of God, that is Jesus. This means at least two crucial things about God and about us. If Jesus Christ is the image of God, that means that if you want to know what God is truly like, look at Jesus Christ. All over the world, people act and speak about God, oftentimes with the most atrocious and appalling ideas, sometimes killing for those ideas. All over Christian history, Christians have often forgotten that if you want to know what God is truly like, look at Jesus. All other ideas or concepts or claims about the character of God, from Christian perspective at least, must be tested by the character of Jesus Christ. I'll say to the teenagers, as I'll say to everyone, if you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus. You can't go wrong. And the second crucial takeaway is this: if Jesus Christ is the image of God, if you want to know what it means to live a truly human life at its best, look at Jesus. He is the prototype. He is the model. The firstborn of all creation, he's the paradigm for a true fulfillment of what it means to be made human, of what it means to be made in the image of God. This is the time of year when, if you go to the bookstore, I recommend it. They're still out there. They're really nice places. If you go to the bookstore, there's a self-help section, and it'll give you your best life in 2018. All kinds of tips for how to live a good life in 2018. Here's one. If you want to know how to live a truly human life in 2018, try to be like Jesus. All other ideas and concepts and claims about human fulfillment must be tested by that one, by the character of Jesus Christ. So, we're just in verse 15. If you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus. If you want to know what it means to be human, look at Jesus. He is the God-man who brings them both together. Verse 16. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers. All things have been created through him and for him. Now, Christians often have the vague theological idea that there was God who was Father Creator and some time ago made the world, and then later showed up Jesus the Son, who appeared when Mary had her baby. But Colossians doesn't tell the story that way. Colossians says that in the very beginning of creation, Jesus Christ was there. And he wasn't just present, he was the medium or the mediator in whom and by whom and through whom the very universe was created. So everything we can see, sun and moon and stars and jellyfish and rocks and precious family members living and dead, everything and everyone was made in him and through him. And everything we can't see, like atoms and angels and parts of the universe that no human eye has yet seen, and love and justice and mercy, things we can't see, all of these were also made in him and through him. In this verse, Paul makes a political turn. He talks about thrones and dominions and rulers and powers. He may be referring to heavenly power structures that we don't know about, of hierarchies of angels and archangels arrayed near the throne of God. But I think he is definitely referring to every structure of human power, especially in an old world where everything was power over and everything was about kings and rulers and thrones. That's the world he's referring to. The words drip with that kind of power. But more broadly, this verse is about everywhere someone is in charge of someone else. Everywhere that somebody is a lord over someone else, in every context of rule, everywhere power is exercised is what is brought to our attention. And the claim is that all of it was created through him and for him. This means that no human ruler is fully independent. Everybody who is in charge of other people is accountable to Jesus Christ. And everything was created for Jesus. Every star, every angel, every marriage, every child, every kingdom, every country, every president, every school principal, every parliament. All were created in him, by him, through him, and for him. This is an old idea. It was sometimes taken to mean that whatever any authority figure in the world decides to do is God's will. That is wrong. Far better to read it this way. God sets up a world with power structures to organize human life. But everybody who is on the top of a power structure is ultimately answerable to God. Now they may forget. They may act like they are the rulers of the world or of their little domain, that they can do whatever they want. But Colossians 1 says that everybody who is in charge is there for Christ, and the world was made in, through, and for him, and they will be answerable for what they do on their thrones, how they exercise their dominion, what kind of ruler they are. This teaching says that because only Jesus Christ is supreme, no human being is ever supreme. No ruler, however pretentious or prideful, is ever supreme. No parent, no school principal, no pastor, no police officer, no judge. Nobody is independent. All are under the lordship of Christ. This must have been a very comforting word to Christians in the context of the Roman Empire. I think it's a comforting word to Christians in any context. Verse 17. He himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Think about it. Before there was anything in creation, there was Jesus Christ. In him and through him and by him, all things were created. And now we learn that in him all things hold together. It is like Jesus is the glue of creation. He is the ordering of creation, the ordering being, the ordering principle. It seems to suggest that if Jesus were to choose to let go at any moment, to release his role, our universe, our earth, our countries, our churches, our relationships, and our lives would come apart. There's a suggestion here that part of a good creation is not just that it was once made, but that it continues to be ordered, held together. Think about all the well-ordered systems of one human body that have to be working right. One body. For you to be in this room today instead of in a hospital room, a lot of stuff has to be going right. And now multiply that by 7 billion, and then look around you to the ecosystems that all have to be working right for us all to be here. And think about other things that have to be working right. Think about the invisible but real powers of love and trust and forgiveness and hope that hold churches and families and marriages together. Colossians 1 says that Jesus is the one who holds it all together. He is the center, the ordering principle. He is the one who keeps chaos from winning. In Jesus, all things hold together, which may mean that if you have a person that you value, a relationship that you cherish, run to Jesus and hold on for dear life. He is the one who holds all things together, so hold on to him. 18. He is the head of the body, the church. So you know from the news around here that we are going to meet a candidate for senior pastor, but that the name is the most closely held secret in the history of the world. We know this. 7 people know this name. You can't pry it out of them. I have tried. It's therefore reassuring to be reminded that the name of the next head of First Baptist Church Decatur is already on hand. His name is Jesus Christ. He was the head of the church when this church was founded. He is the head now, and he will be the head of this church until he comes again in glory to judge the living and the dead. How easily we get this wrong. We are most likely to get it wrong when we actually have a permanent installed senior pastor on hand. At last, we seem to act as if we believe we have finally found the head of the church. And then maybe we ask the new head of the church to do everything and be everything we ever dreamed the head of a church could do or be. And then maybe we get disappointed or even angry when it doesn't turn out like we want. Sometimes churches are healthiest during interims because then it is hardest to forget that only Jesus is the head of the church. There are no permanent heads of the church other than Jesus. That is true when there is an installed senior pastor and when there isn't. So, beloved church, when the new pastor comes, remember that everybody here is still part of the body of Christ and still must keep pulling your load. And that Jesus Christ is the only head of the church. The text goes on, he is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he might have first place in everything. Earlier we heard that Jesus was the firstborn of all creation. Now we round out the picture by hearing that he is the firstborn from the dead. The one through whom creation was made came into the world. We celebrate his coming tomorrow. When he came into the world that he made, the world knew him not, and the world took him to the cross. Those made in the image of God murdered the icon to Theo. But then, God raised him from the dead. Jesus Christ, who was first in creation, is the first in resurrection as well. He is the first in everything. And his resurrection foretells our own. We who are in Jesus will follow the trail that he has blazed. We too will experience resurrection from the dead and life everlasting. I hope that's comforting to you as it is to me today. 19. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. You know, there are a lot of people who believe that Jesus was a really nice man. He was awesome. Good teacher, really nice to people, did some miracles maybe, or looks like miracles or whatever. That's not what Colossians 1:19 says. Colossians 1:19 says that he was the one in whom all the fullness of God dwelt. He was the God-man. All the goodness and power and glory of God dwelt in Jesus. He fully embodied divinity just as he fully embodied humanity. He transfigured both in the drama of his life, incarnation, life, death, and resurrection. And so then finally the passage concludes, through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood of his cross. The world is broken. Did you know that? This we know without theology. In fact, we know it almost more than we ever have, because if anything horrible happens anywhere in the world, we know about it within 5 minutes. This is our reality right now, especially for those who spend much time on social media. I was scrolling through Twitter unwisely yesterday, and I saw a news report of like a 17-year-old boy who murdered his girlfriend's parents at like Christmas dinner or whatever. And I thought, A, I wish I had not known this right now. But of course, the brokenness of that situation and so many others is all around us and in us, so much that it can crush us in despair. This verse, as does the New Testament as a whole, states that God has made provision for all of our broken mess through Jesus, through the cross of Jesus. What we most need is reconciliation. We need to be reconciled with the God who made us, and we need to be reconciled with the people around us and the creation in which we live. And that reconciliation has been offered through the cross. The one in whom and for whom creation was made is the same one who entered the world as a helpless baby, who offered ministry as the Messiah of Israel, who died on the cross to reconcile us to God, and who was raised from the dead for all of us to follow who would believe. That is what Colossians 1 says, and that is quite a message. And so, Christmas is, that's my sermon, our sermon series. So here it is. Christmas is Christ supreme. Christ supreme in creation and in power, in godliness and in goodness, the embodiment of the image of God. Supreme in resurrection, supreme in the church, supreme in reconciliation, supreme in sacrifice at the cross, supreme in love and in justice. Jesus Christ is supreme, and the church is the community that knows it, proclaims it, and lives it. Thanks be to God. All are invited, especially on Christmas Eve, to decide what your relationship will be to this Jesus we have been hearing about. Will you believe? But more, will you follow? And will you choose to be a part of a community that attempts to do that? This is one such community, and all are invited to join, to seek baptism, or to somehow just be related to this community as you feel called. So I will stand at the front one last time, and you can come down that long green carpet if you would like one more opportunity as we have our invitation hymn.